From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Words on Bathroom Walls is, so far this fiscal year, the only film to take advantage of North Carolina industry incentives. Five Home Depot commercials also claimed some state grant money over the last fiscal year. While there are efforts underway in Raleigh to sweeten the pot and lure made-for-TV movies and smaller film projects, the industry in Wilmington is not a shadow of its former self. In 2014, the General Assembly ended the tax rebate film incentive. That year alone, close to $81 million went back to producers. What replaced the tax rebate? A grant program. That grant fund has grown and now gets $31 million each year with no sunset. Whether the tax rebates were actually worth the fiscal unpredictability and the expense, or they were what Americans for Prosperity calls a Hollywood handout, is a debate that continues, albeit less so in the southeastern part of North Carolina. A recent proposal sponsored by North Carolina Representative Ted Davis, a Republican from New Hanover County, would lower the minimum spending requirement for TV and film projects and increase the funding cap for TV series and feature films. That's according to Hunter Ingram, film industry reporter for the Star News and our guest today. Hunter Ingram is the only dedicated North Carolina film industry reporter, which he's covered for the past 5 years, starting at the peak when Iron Man 3 was opening in theaters. Hunter Ingram also covers the city of Wilmington and writes a column called TV Hunter. He joins us now. Hunter Ingram, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. And we are, of course, inviting you to join the conversation. How do you think the film industry could come back to life in the Cape Fear region? Are you encouraged by the new efforts in Raleigh to beef up the number of eligible productions? Do you think the region has actually lost nothing in dollars and perhaps just misses the cool factor? Give us a call and tell us about it on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Hunter Ingram, you broke the news of the possibility of a new television series filming here. This is news that you broke yesterday,
yes.
Tuesday. What is the deal with Swamp Thing? Is it confirmed?
It is not confirmed. And I think there's a few factors that are playing into that. As you mentioned, there's some efforts to revise the language of the film grant that would likely make it more attractive to Swamp Thing, because it would be a television series that could get a little more money under that new language once the new fiscal year starts on July 1st. But it's definitely not confirmed. From what I heard from sources within the film industry, they're definitely just talking to crew members about their availability. That's a good sign, because it shows that they are invested in really sussing out whether this would be a really good place to have Swamp Thing come. And it also has a few local connections. As I mentioned in that article, the executive producer of it, James Wan, directed The Conjuring here, which in 2013 actually was released in theaters the day I interviewed at the Star News. It was a really good production for this town, and I think that plays well into showing that he knows the area and he's able to kind of champion for it when they're having discussions about where Swamp Thing should film.
Now, I do want to unpack the proposed tweaks
okay.
to the film grant fund in a moment, but first, just for local crew, we've all already gotten a few emails that I do want to get to quickly from local professional mm-hmm. film folks. But is it likely that someone who does have a big Hollywood track record, like James Wan, mm-hmm. is it likely that he would bring his own crew people here, or would he hire locally?
I think already having been here, there's a really good chance he would hire locally. The film grant itself already really rewards keeping your project really staffed with local crew. A certain amount of them have to already be local, and frankly, it's more cost effective to be able to hire locally, because you don't have to fly people out. You don't have to fly people out and put them in hotels and keep them out here for the duration of the shoot. So finding that crew locally, which we certainly have, you know, some of them have been scattered a little bit over the past couple of years, but that that crew base is definitely a factor that people really see when they're looking at coming here, because it's pretty stacked.
Now, what kind of production would this be? A television series, but it wouldn't air on.
No, it's pretty specific and it's pretty unique. It's similar to maybe a Netflix show where it would only air online or a streaming site, but it wouldn't air on Netflix. It wouldn't air on Hulu. It's going to be a new streaming service from DC Entertainment. And DC Entertainment, the film branch, does the Batman, Superman movies. They do Justice League, but they're creating their own digital streaming site to do more of these creative comic book influenced series that can go directly to viewers online. And that's going to be called the DC Universe. So it would be a streaming series.
Okay. Now, going back to this proposed legislation that tweaks the language in the film grant,
yes,
it increases the funding cap for television series and feature films. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And how would this be increased if this passed?
Well, I think it's going to be attractive to people, and especially things like Swamp Thing, because, you know, they're able to spend more money and get more money back. Under this previous and current language, series can only get about $9 million, and that's really what the most recent series that shot here, Good Behavior, that's what it kind of bumped up against with its spending. And so allowing them to access more money, you know, it's going under this proposed language that's in the budget right now and obviously would need to be approved and then passed, it would up that series money from $9 million a season to $12 million. And that is only going to be more attractive to productions that are already spending that money and then can see that they can get more of that money back by coming here, which is what other incentives and other grant programs in other states are already doing. And that's why North Carolina has had some trouble competing.
Another thing that this would do, this proposal from Ted Davis, would be to lower the minimum spend. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for a production?
Well, and I should say that, Ted Davis is the one that I spoke to for this, but I do know that some other local legislators were aware of it as well. So I imagine that there was some type of awareness for Michael Lee and Holly Grange. But there is that intention to lower the minimum spend because it's going to allow more productions to come and take advantage of the incentive or the grant program, because having a lower minimum is going to allow productions like made-for-TV movies, which aren't spending $5 million to make something for Hallmark or Lifetime or even a cable network or HBO. They are not spending that much, so they don't qualify, and therefore it kind of eliminates them from wanting to come here. And so lowering that $1 million really opens up a new door for made-for-TV movies, and they're specifically mentioned in this new language as television shot to be shown on television, and allows, you know, this industry to kind of court this corner of the industry that's pretty lucrative, with Hallmark making, you know, two dozen Christmas movies a year and Lifetime always making movies. So, and that was a big part of the industry in the 90s as well. So I think that kind of making it a little more conducive to the current grant program could bring in some interest.
Now, the way you write about this, it sounds like this actually has legs, like this could gain some traction, and there's a good possibility this could pass. Why do you think that? Why is this different this time? Because our local coalition of legislators has in the past tried to get more robust film incentive language.
Absolutely.
Through Raleigh, and it hasn't worked.
Well, I think Ted Davis in the article I put up yesterday made a good point that this isn't about bringing in more money. It's about tweaking the language so that the money that's currently already being given to the grant program can be better redistributed and made more attractive, so that projects will do what the grant program is intended to do, and that's to lure projects to the state so it puts the state's crew to work. And so I think that is a good way to make it, as he put in that article, palatable to politicians, because he's not asking for more money. He's basically just trying to better the grant program as is. And
expand the eligibility.
Exactly. And he seemed pretty confident that there was support. As the Film Industry Reporter, I would like to see that in the sense that, that language would make the film industry, again, a little more open to some different projects, which would, bring more production in and therefore more things for me to write about selfishly.
And I do want to get to some emails from crew. John writes, I'm a local film crew worker, barely holding on. I keep hearing from local politicians like Senator Lee that this new grant program is better than our old rebate program. If that is the case, why is it that we only have one production filming in the state right now and $65 million in the grant program pot that we can't give away? And he signs it concerned and tired of working out of state.
Mm-hmm. I think the answer to that is honestly, I feel like they're trying to perfect the grant program. It has not been, working because there is only one production. There's $30 million and technically this year, $34 million because of some rollover money from the year before. And one movie and a handful of commercials coming in and taking that money is not what they want from this grant program. And so I think this attempt to perfect it really might make it a little more attractive and be a step in the right direction. But, with that money being there, just because there's money there, it does not mean that it's conducive to some of these productions that are looking at us from the West Coast and trying to find out if we are palatable or not.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're taking a look at the ups and downs of the film industry in the Cape Fear region with the state's only North Carolina film industry reporter, Hunter Ingram of the Star News. When we come back from this break, we're going to hear from some more listeners. If you have a perspective on the film industry you'd like to share, if you've seen family members or friends leave town to follow the work, or maybe you're relieved the state no longer gives tax rebates to filmmakers, tell us about it on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're taking a closer look at film and TV production in North Carolina. Our expert today is Hunter Ingram, film industry and City of Wilmington reporter for the Star News. He happens to be the only reporter in the state whose beat is the North Carolina film industry. We want to hear from you on this Wednesday. Do you work in the film industry? Do you travel more than you used to for work? Do you think new efforts to amend the grant fund by lowering minimum spends and lifting spending caps is a good move for the state? If you could make a case to state lawmakers about the film incentive, either for or against, what's the one point you would make that you think everybody else has missed? Call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Hunter Ingram, one of the discussion points that we keep hearing around the film industry and whether it's really going to come back here is HB2. Mm-hmm. That made national news when it was passed, popularly called the bathroom bill. It did a lot of other things, mm-hmm. but that was the piece of it that opponents of it found the most offensive. Mm-hmm. The state saw the loss of sports events, concerts, mm-hmm. all kinds of production, mm-hmm. and there was an amendment, sort of repeal. It wasn't really a repeal mm-hmm. of HB2 in full. It was a tweaking. Mm-hmm. Where is that now? And are big film companies talking about that?
HB2 did linger there for a long time, and it did have an impact locally on the film industry. As you mentioned, it has been, in several ways repealed and replaced with HB 142. Which sounds still very similar, only two numbers difference, and it does still have an impact because there are production companies that don't look at North Carolina because that repealed bill, the 142, still has elements that are considered, discriminatory against the LGBT community. And so that has had an impact, and I imagine would still have an impact for certain companies that, sworn off North Carolina until it repeals this second bill.
So do you think there's concern out there in the film industry about just the culture here? Like, do people ever say, is North Carolina anti-gay? I mean, do those questions come up?
Well, they don't come to me. But I think that they are conversations that are had. And maybe not in such, terms of is it anti-gay, but I think just the concern that it's still kind of a part of the legislation, that it's still in there, even though it's been stripped down a little bit, definitely puts a sour taste for some production companies. Some of them, see the other elements of North Carolina as more positive than one piece of legislation. And so they want to, contribute to the local film industry. They want to take part in it, in spite of something that other companies have taken just full stop issue with.
That brings to mind the recent announcement about the cancellation of Roseanne, mm-hmm. which was a hit for ABC.
Yes.
They canceled that series despite the fact that it was doing extremely well.
It's the number one show.
That was because, of course, Roseanne tweeted something that was blatantly racist and offensive mm-hmm. about a former Obama administration yep. official. She has since apologized. But nevertheless, the show was canceled. Mm-hmm. You wrote a column about that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this is kind of – is this part of the Me Too, the Black Lives Matter, zero tolerance now mm-hmm. for racism, sexism, any kind of aggression in mm-hmm. that sense? What does this reflect?
Well, I think it definitely reflects a time and a conversation that's happening about the limits and, those hard lines that people can't pass. And I think that those lines have moved a lot, closer to decency, if you would, because of conversations and movements like Me Too and Black Lives Matter, because there is an idea and a passion to really call out this stuff more so than it has been in the past. Some of it's been let slide because of success, because of finances. I wrote in that column that, Roseanne Barr's racism was not new to yesterday. She's done photo shoots. She's done things. They've been widely reported. She's been on Twitter for months leading up to that. But what was surprising was how monumental it was for ABC in a matter of hours to cancel not only their number one show, but television's number one show. And it was as I wrote in the column, a lot of people praised it as a stand against racism and a stand against this mentality that because you're successful, you can tweet whatever you want or you can do whatever you want. But I also, on the other hand, ABC still got into business with Roseanne despite her history of saying things that were inflammatory and discriminatory. And so that has to be taken into consideration. This was really rectifying a decision they made that was already controversial. And I think yesterday it just reached a fever pitch with that conversation of Me Too and just decency.
So is it less than about ABC's stand on racism and more about the fact that maybe advertisers were dropping right and left, or there were other types of fallout that we didn't hear about?
Well, I think that they made that move so quickly so that none of that would happen. So often we hear of, cable news stations that their hosts say things or tweet things that are, seen as very racist or very, discriminatory. And you see advertisers drop out. And that is when you get even more press. And, so ABC really took a swift move, as I said, and it got commended for it, and I think that they do. They should be commended for it, but you can't forget that they put themselves in that situation to begin with.
Megan writes, I'm a Wilmington resident. Several major production companies, including Disney and ABC, have stated publicly that they are boycotting our state because of HB2 and because HB 142 didn't go far enough to repeal HB2. What can our elected officials do to remedy that and help us bring our film industry back? And we did kind of take apart already HB2 and its newer incarnation, HB 142. But is this something in your traveling around Hunter Ingram that you hear state legislators talk about? Is there may be some talk among film industry folk about this, but is there talk among legislators about it?
About possibly repealing 142?
About doing more to appeal to film industry.
You know, I have not heard any talk of actually getting rid of 142, despite the film industry's hesitations, the production company's hesitations towards it. I think the way to remedy that, and, she is right, Disney and ABC were very public about not coming to North Carolina because of 142, and even before that, HB2. And I think the only way to kind of to return that business would be a repeal of that bill, or at least another, revision that would take out some more of that discriminatory language that Disney has taken issue with. But I personally have not heard of any conversations like that. I don't dip my my beat into the political waters as much as Tim Buckland, who works at our newspaper as well, who's the politics reporter. But from a film perspective, I haven't heard much of that. But I do know that it's out there because there are some production companies that are definitely aware of it.
You're listening to Coastline. We're looking at the film industry in North Carolina today, the ups and downs of the business and the changing incentive history in the state. With us on this Wednesday, Hunter Ingram, North Carolina film industry and City of Wilmington reporter for the Star News. You can call us during the live Wednesday show at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. We had Lee from Wilmington call and say, I don't see the industry coming back to North Carolina. It all moved to Georgia because of McCrory. And I don't know if that's related to this political conspiracy theory that we've heard come up. And Hunter, I said this to you before we started today, that every time we've had a discussion on Coastline about film or film incentives, this theory has come up. And Nick frames it this way. Nick writes, "Let me see if this sums up the horrible place North Carolina film finds itself. Former Governor Pat McCrory's campaign was funded by the Koch brothers. The Kochs opened a huge studio in Atlanta and simultaneously campaigned against renewal of the North Carolina film tax credits that had been working well. Pat McCrory gave in, didn't renew the credit, which led to all productions moving to Atlanta. Can we please get the tax credit started again?" he writes. What is your take on this kind of conspiracy theory allegation, Hunter Ingram?
Well, when I first started here, and it was in 2013, there were those early conversations about dismantling the incentive. And, I followed that through that whole legislative battle that went on in Raleigh and the local efforts to really publicize the benefits of the incentive. And I would say that whole time, And that fight, and I call it a fight because the local crew really fought for this industry and that incentive. I think it was a passionate time, and I think that it didn't end up well for the incentive. Obviously, the incentive was done away with, and there are these attempts to kind of find out why it happened when people here locally feel so passionate about why this is a good industry. And I can't speak to the particular controversy of the Koch brothers and Pat McCrory just because I don't know much about it. Obviously, I have heard about it many, many times. But I think that it was an attempt to really explain why North Carolina was getting rid of an industry that so many people, at least locally, felt was a valuable part of the state. They were trying to explain it. They were trying to find a reasoning for it. And, the Koch brothers did have that studio in Atlanta, and Georgia has seen a tremendous amount of business, especially since we've lost a lot of it. And I think that, there are some parallels there. The actual relationship between the McCrory funding and all of that, I can't speak to. But it's definitely a persistent theory that did have a hand in the industry. Again, I can't speak to the actual theory, but I think it definitely has some reasoning with trying to grapple with why this happened.
We're talking with Hunter Ingram, North Carolina film industry and City of Wilmington reporter for the Star News on today's Coastline. You can call us during this live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Jack from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, Rachel. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You guys just touched on a lot of it. I think what might be helpful, and I hear in the Koch brothers' story, if you've been here longer than 5 minutes and you're in the business, we all know this story. Mm-hmm. And I think you touched on it. I think it makes sense. Because a lot of people have, especially folks, I think, that don't know the industry, don't really understand why you would take away, the economic impact of a business and an industry that did $9.5 billion with a B last year in Georgia.
Jack, how long have you been an actor in North Carolina?
2005, Rachel.
And
so I've seen the ups and downs.
So it sounds like this is home for you, but why are you still here?
It's a great question. I could give you 10, I could give you more than that. I have friends who've sold the farm literally and moved to Atlanta for work. And then I have friends who have kids, like me, who enjoy North Carolina, enjoy Wilmington, and don't want to move if we can help it. So instead, we drive to Atlanta, and a lot of times as local hire, sometimes having to deal with all the sort of rigmarole of that. It's not only is it taking away a tax base here, it's not fun for families. And I know plenty of grips and people behind the camera that have to go away from their family for months because this is what they do, and they have to find the work. And so it's, I think it's frustrating for a lot of people to understand why is Georgia, which is not, it's not really political. It's not like they're more, liberal, really. So wherever you are on the spectrum, I think, Boeing is in Charleston because it's not just a pretty city, and Spartanburg has BMW because tax incentives. So I understand, I think, the whole purist argument that maybe tax incentives shouldn't exist, but that's not how it works. That's why Delta's in Atlanta, And so I like hearing you guys talk about the grant, and I hope it would get bigger, and that'd be awesome. But you pointed out, they didn't even use what they have because it's written so convoluted.
Yeah.
And why not look at the ones that work and go, look, either we can battle this game and we can have our own incentive modeled after even South Carolina's that's got a better incentive.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people think that guys who are trying to do movies go, we love Wilmington and we want to help the people out there. It's just accountants in a room that go, it makes so much more sense for you to shoot this film in Atlanta. We're literally saving millions of dollars.
Sure. Jack, thank you. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate you sharing your perspective and your experience. If you'd like to weigh in, you can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Hunter Ingram, Jack raises an interesting point. Georgia is also a politically conservative state.
Mm-hmm.
So why that divergence between, we're talking about North Carolina in this context as a politically conservative state?
I think a lot of opposition here in North Carolina was, from places that really didn't see much business from the film industry. A lot of it is centered on bigger cities, and then Wilmington, which has the benefit of the studio and the coast and the river and a lot of visual things the small town aesthetic that really lends itself well to a lot of different projects. That's where there were some sticking points for politicians in Raleigh. And while I think some of those were also voiced in Georgia, it seems like Georgia was just a little more open to putting up the money for it. And putting up the money for it has been beneficial for Georgia because he is right. They have had billions of dollars come into their state largely from Marvel movies, largely from Disney movies that have sworn off North Carolina. And so
– again, going back to HBO.
Exactly. So, there is that divide and, it just happened to be that Georgia – was ready to put money in it, and North Carolina really pushed back, and you see where we have landed now.
We had a call. Bobby from Wilmington says he came here from Houston, Texas to shoot Firestarter.
Oh, wow.
That would have been
1983, 1984, the first film.
There's our film historian, our North Carolina film historian, Hunter Ingram. He says, I chose to live my life here. The rental market, cars, food, all depreciated since the industry left. Think of all the investment in Georgia now. Mm-hmm. And Dallas, my take is simple. In 2014, under our old rebate program, the North Carolina Film Commission reported $268 million in spending by the film industry and over 40 productions that employed 19,000 people. Later that year, Senator Lee went to Raleigh and our film industry went to Georgia. The grant program isn't working. Why did Michael Lee, concerned citizen rights, kill our film industry? This film incentive changed in 2014. Mm-hmm. That's when it went from a tax rebate to a grant fund. Mm-hmm. Georgia has a tax rebate. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of explain how that works for folks who aren't familiar with it?
The incentive is again a rebate, and so it's going to be a rebate on what you're spending. It's also bigger. We had a 25% tax rebate, and it had unlimited funding. You know, so not necessarily unlimited, but it was funding what was coming in. So that's why you saw $80 million being spent, because there was no cap on funding, and so that was attractive in the incentive. And I think that's where
$80 million sent back to producers.
Yes, as that rebate, because they're getting 25% of the local spend, or they were getting the 25% of the local spend that they were doing here that qualified for the rebate. And so, and then it was capped at $20 million of the amount of that you could earn back. You know, Iron Man was the only one that kind of really tapped out on that, but Iron Man 3. But, you know, the grant program is a little different because it is a grant. It requires multiple audits or at least one audit at the very end. And it's just a different kind of structure. And I think...
And I'm not going to ask you to squeeze all that into the next 20 seconds. I'm going to... We're going to revisit this when we come back from the break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a look at film incentives in North Carolina and the film industry. Is the state poised for another upswing as the grant fund grows and seeks to capture a wider range of productions? We're talking with Hunter Ingram of the Star News, and we want to hear from you on this Wednesday, 910-343-1138 or coastline at whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're taking a long view of the film industry in North Carolina with the state's only dedicated film industry reporter, Hunter Ingram of the Star News, who also covers the city of Wilmington. And we want to hear from you on this Wednesday. Do you think there's a way to beef up the incentive without changing it back to a tax rebate? Should the Cape Fear region focus on building an industry that is by nature transient? You can email us today at coastline@whqr.org or call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. This is the last segment, so just a few more minutes to get your question or comment in. Hunter Ingram, just before we went to break, you were taking apart probably the most complex part of this discussion, which was the difference between the tax rebate incentive, mm-hmm. which Georgia actually has, and mm-hmm. several other states mm-hmm. like Louisiana and New York have, mm-hmm. And the grant fund, which is a pot of money. Mm-hmm. And so can you just kind of recap why the tax rebate was so appealing? And
yes.
this pot of money that's sitting in Raleigh unused is not so appealing.
You know, and I think the best way to kind of tackle that is not even looking at the mechanisms of the actual things, but kind of what makes each of them attractive. And the incentive, as I mentioned, did not have a funding cap. It had a maximum of how much money a specific or an individual production could make, which was $20 million. But it allowed you to have $25 million, so there wasn't this limitation of competition. As long as you qualified, as long as you were eligible with the amount of money you spent, you were able to get into that incentive. Now it's more of a trial process because there is limited funding, $31 million a year. And, you know, one of the things that I think has made the grant program less attractive than the incentive is this rigid structure about how much you can earn and how much you have to spend, which, as we mentioned earlier, has been addressed a little bit in this draft Senate bill or budget. And so I think that was kind of a limitation that was different than the incentive. And really, you know, and also as I go back to it, you know, there were the political matters of HB2 and stuff like that that kind of happened at the same time as the grant fund that made it a little, it compounded a lot of issues.
So then how have states like Georgia been able to do that tax rebate structure? I mean, we've heard from some folks who've said the sheer unpredictability of that, like being able to budget to write those tax rebate checks was part of what made it distasteful.
It was. And, you know, there you didn't really know how much was going to be coming in. And there is an unpredictability to that. And I think that's why there is a grant cap on this, $30 million, because the state can budget for it now. You know, Georgia, again, I don't spend too much time in Georgia politics, but they definitely do, you know, in many ways took a risk on the film industry, and it paid off for them because they did it as we were kind of changing ours. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of thoughts on that as well. But I think that they've been able to really channel interest into their state in a way that North Carolina was trying to do, but in a definitely a different, more limited way.
Dina from Leland called in and said, I've worked in the film industry for 20 years. They laugh at us from other places like LA for our social policies and Gen X issue. Now, I've heard from a number of people who've just said, Georgia has the business now. They've got the infrastructure. They've got that film ecosystem there. Mm-hmm. It's not coming back to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But you don't necessarily agree with that.
As someone who writes about television, there is so much television, so many shows, so many projects out there, and they have to film somewhere. And so, yes, Georgia has really cornered this market in the South because of its willingness to give money to a grant program or an incentive. But I know just from reporting and reading industry magazines and news sources every day, there's projects coming up every day, and they have to go somewhere. And if North Carolina can find a way to make its current program attractive, it can attract things like Swamp Thing, as we mentioned earlier, and Words on Bathroom Walls. It might not be Marvel movies and constant, you know, projects like Georgia, but it can be if done right. It seems there is an intention to make it more of a sustainable, consistent work, you know, bunch of projects that come in and really employ the crew.
There's enough work.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would tell you there's a lack of television shows on television right now or movies. So
we have John from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline, John. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I was just curious how much our lawmakers have been considering the down the road benefits that we accrue from like a hit show like One Tree Hill. I literally have only lived here less than 3 years, and I think there have already been four or five One Tree Hill fan conventions in Wilmington in that time. So these people keep coming here and spending money on hotels and food and such. It's just another benefit I don't think that they're paying attention to.
John, you raise a really interesting element in this discussion. I'm going to let, since it's pretty noisy where you are, Hunter Ingram, this whole idea of a TV show having a legacy even after the show itself has wrapped. How frequent is that? How common is it? Is it something we can look forward to with other shows?
You know, I think One Tree Hill is a very specific and rare thing. You know, there definitely can be tourism elements after a project. Safe Haven in Southport, the Nicholas Sparks film, definitely brings in people. You know, Dawson's Creek still brings in people. But One Tree Hill was a project that latched onto Wilmington in a way where it identified itself with the essence of Wilmington. Yes, it was named One Tree Hill or Tree Hill, but you know, it made it so people felt like they could visit Tree Hill. And that's not the case with some projects like Iron Man that digitally made us Florida or other places. And so it is rare, but it's definitely something that is a factor in what lawmakers are looking at because they want that tourism. They want there to be an element of, you know, continuous revenue or money flow or interest in the state because of a project. And, you know, One Tree Hill definitely has a legacy here because I cover every single one of those conventions, and they are twice a year, and they have some of the most passionate people who come to this town with heart eyes looking at Wilmington, ready to spend money. And I think that's a good thing for people to focus on. But I also think that we don't have multiple One Tree Hills here. We have One Tree Hill. And I think that you should look at that in a way that is both cautious in trying to get that, but also it can happen. I mean, you can find those things. Who knows? People might really, if Swamp Thing does actually come to Wilmington, you know, as we mentioned earlier, it's not a confirmed thing yet, but if it does end up coming to Wilmington and shoots here for, you know, a full season or multiple seasons, who knows? It might present Wilmington in a way that makes it fun for comic book fans of this and even just television fans to come here and visit Wilmington. It's really just a matter of courting the projects that you think can have that lasting effect. And I think that's what, you know, local film officials at the Wilmington Regional Film Commission and the studio and state officials do.
Going back to Swamp Thing and the fact that it is as yet unconfirmed, mm-hmm. but you have pretty good intel that it's...
They're definitely interested, for sure.
Yes. So I've heard scuttlebutt, unconfirmed, that they are reserving studio space. Is that a step too far?
No, I don't think it would necessarily be a step too far. I can't confirm that. I don't know that. But I think that, you know, a project, once they kind of set their sights on a place, especially some place like Wilmington where there, you know, there isn't that much work, but there's definitely the infrastructure, they definitely want to start looking at what they can do here and can they get it going. And so, you know, it's definitely not signed on the dotted line for what I know. And I can't confirm anything about studio space, but I think that it would be a very good sign, and I think it's heading in that direction, that, you know, Swamp Thing would love to take advantage of Wilmington swamps. And I sure hope they do, because it sounds like a fun project.
Can you just talk about kind of the tone among film professionals here? There are people working on Words on Bathroom Walls, mm-hmm. the only feature film, I guess, this mm-hmm. fiscal year that has taken advantage of the North Carolina Grant Fund. But how are local crew people feeling?
You know, I think over the past couple of years, they feel a little beaten down because they, like I mentioned earlier, they really fought for that incentive at the end of 2014. And then it obviously kind of went away with the start of 2015. And I think they are so passionate about this local film industry. Many of them are generations into their family working into this. And they want the work. They want to be able to stay home with their families. They want to be able to stay in Wilmington because it's their home. And, you know, them getting one project here and there has really, really kind of made it difficult to love this industry because it's not feeding them in the way that it used to. And that's been really sad to see because they are such hard workers, and it's incredible to see the things they make in this town that then go out into the world and air nationally and internationally. But I think there is this sense of hope and this sense, you know, even if it might wane here and there, I think there is this sense of hope that next measure or that next step that's taken is going to be the step in the right direction, like this language or like, you know, getting something like Swamp Thing or getting something like Words on Bathroom Walls. I think there is that idea that this production is going to be the next production that's going to lead to the next one, and they want it.
Don writes, can you comment on the timing of new proposed film legislation in an upcoming election period? Appearing to be a ploy, he writes, to boost an incumbent politician's popularity.
Well, I think that, you know, Ted Davis has been a supporter of film, but this is an election year. And so, you know, you have to, you know, I absolutely mentioned in that story that he is running for re-election because, you know, that has to be taken into account. How you feel about, you know, measures being done in an election year like this as a way to court support, you know, as you head to a ballot, you know, is definitely a personal matter and how you feel about it. But if this language and these efforts that he's done, and like I said, other local officials probably had at least a knowledge of or a hand in, you know, him doing this, if it's successful and it brings in more projects, you know, you can then look at it and see, was it all worth it?
We have an email from Jerry who writes, Georgia reported $2.6 billion in spending by the film industry last year. Again, another listener talking about Georgia. All they did was essentially replicate our program. They are eating our lunch, he writes. Meanwhile, we are incentivizing dirty jobs in Wilmington and slashing corporate taxes. We do pick winners and losers. The film industry is a clean, green, sustainable industry, and our elected officials killed it to pay for their tax cuts for Chemours and Duke Energy. Like your other listener writes, Jerry, I too am concerned and tired of working and spending my money out of state. This raises a question about incentives and the cost of incentives, which was a big argument for the change in the structure of the incentive in 2014. Yes. There was a study done by some University of North Carolina Wilmington students, and don't want to get too much into the weeds of this study, but it kind of took apart the notion that the film incentive gives a boost to the local economy. The study kind of said it's, and it was talking about the old version of the film incentive, the tax rebate. And it said that essentially those film incentives were expensive, and there was also an opportunity cost. You took a look at that study.
I did, and I spoke to the author, which was a UNCW student. She, her name's Devin, and she was both a film major and an economics major, and so she kind of blended those two together. And she looked at, you know, and I spoke to her. I basically told her that, you know, and she agreed that she followed the dollars, which is what a lot of people, especially ones not local, who see that on the ground, you know, impact of tourism and crew and everything. She saw that, you know, compared to some other grant programs, both ones that the state gave and ones that the state missed out on, the grant program or the incentive did not have the same return on dollars as other industries did based on those grant packages.
And she was looking at companies like Continental Tire and Apple.
And so she looked at, again, she looked at the dollars. And, you know, again, for a lot of people in the state, especially those who don't see much business from film, it is about the dollars because they're giving taxpayer dollars to these productions. And so, you know, I talked to her about this study and, you know, the one thing that we talked about was how it really focused on just the dollars. And for a lot of people, that's not enough because they are really campaigning for it being a clean industry. They're campaigning for it being a tourism booster for the places where it touches. And all of these aspects that weren't touched on in the study. And, you know, she said that, you know, she ran out of time because this was a project. This was a thesis thing. So, you know, she didn't include those. But, you know, it is valuable to look at the dollars. I would like to see kind of what that is now, looking at the grant program, because the incentive, again, is in the past, and I don't really see the incentive coming back just because
in that form,
in that
as a tax rebate.
Because the state really has thrown its support behind this grant program, and with those changes that they're trying to make to the language and the distribution of the funds, it's an attempt to make it so this is what gets the work, not kind of looking into the past.
Now, we just have a minute or so left. You've written recently about the Local Film Commission, which is headed, of course, by Johnny Griffin, local leaders trying to strategize on their own, you know, outside of Raleigh. What are the prospects there?
You know, I think they are absolutely talking about, you know, what makes the grant program work. You know, when they go to Los Angeles and they go to Hollywood and they go to all these places, they're talking about what makes the grant program work. And they're really hammering that idea that has always been an idea and always been a talking point, that the infrastructure, the crew, the locations, it's here. It's waiting for you. And if they can make that grant program a little more attractive, a little more conducive to some of these projects that are looking to get out of the West Coast and out of the clutter of Georgia. Georgia is very busy to the point that they don't even have the crew sometimes. It's stretched really thin. They have to borrow some of the crew from other states, including North Carolina and Wilmington.
And crew members there can pick and choose their jobs.
Exactly. So if they can get that program to look attractive and get it to be conducive to filming, then they can hopefully get those projects to come in, and I'd love to write about them if they do.
That's this edition of Coastline. Hunter Ingram, what a pleasure having you with us today.
Thank you so much. I love talking about film, and this was a pleasure.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast or find it on the WHQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.